Welcome into the Original Gangsters podcast. I'm your host, Scott Bernstein. I got my main man from the Great White North, our Montreal gangland expert.
Wow.
Former labor union leader, Ken Pereira. We got some breaking news that we want to get out and analyze. A lot of speculation in the last couple of weeks since the big Montreal Mafia bust that took down a very large portion of that organization, most of the leadership, Godfather Leo Rizzuto, reputed underbosses, Stefano Solicito, Pete D'Adamo, and a number of street boss Baldy Barbario, a number of high-ranking lieutenants on a gangsterism and murder case. They're all being held without bond. There were a lot of conjecture, a lot of debate, a lot of different media outlets, podcasts, experts chiming in these last couple of weeks on, A, is this the end of the Rizzuto crime family? Are we writing the obituary for the one of the great grand mafia dynasties in not just North American history, probably in world
Absolutely.
History.
Yeah.
Are we writing the obit? Are we just having a transition of power within that empire? Are the former allies that became enemies, a la Renard Desjardins and his people, are they going to sweep into power? So a lot more questions and answers until now, where I'm going to, me and Ken are going to break down what I've been able to exclusively report. And I'll lead it off by saying the new leaders of the Montreal Mafia are the old leaders of the Montreal Mafia, in the sense that Leo Rizzuto and Pete D'Adamo have made it very clear from behind bars to the outside in a meeting last weekend that I'm going to talk about, that we have very elite intelligence from, included a making ceremony via a communications device, an iPhone making ceremony, wow, State of the Union address, and a get the word out that we're not giving up the reins. We're not going to put in an acting boss. We're not going to let Desjardins and his protege, Vittorio Merarchi, come in and plant a flag. This is our organization. We still got it. We might be in prison, but we're going to still run it. You know, as kind of make a quote from Donnie Brasco. I know this is kind of inside baseball, but Rusty's going to run it all from the can. This is Leo and Pete D'Adamo saying, we got this. We're handling things from behind bars, and we want to get that out there. So that's the first thing. Let's get your take on it, Ken.
First of all, it's very significant what Leo said, but I just finished this morning talking to my cousins in Portugal, right? And there's a huge heat wave in everywhere. Europe. In Europe, exactly. You know, they're talking about 46 degrees, okay? So I'm just saying 118 degrees.
Yeah.
So and I didn't tell them about Original Gangsters. He has no idea. But, man, Scott, you're on a heat wave. You're on a heat wave since at least the last month. Believe me, at the same, it's everything you're coming out with is major. And it's putting a lot of points and dots on the eyes. I think we're getting somewhere with this, because at the beginning, we're finding out, you know, who they're joining, Vic Turmel, and all what you've talked about, and all these special meetings. And now that Leo has said out loud through your sources that, you know, listen, I'm going to run everything from the inside, to me, is so significant. In one sense, he is admitting that he's going to be there for a while.
We talked about that off air.
Exactly.
That's a great nuance to this. It's kind of like saying something without saying something.
Exactly. Maybe his lawyers won't like what we're saying, but he's putting his soldiers in place, telling him, I'm going to do this. we're going to run this and don't worry about it. We're still going to be the kingpins or some way like this. You know, maybe I'm. And the other thing is, you know, like it's an arrogancy in a certain style saying, you know, I'm coming in here and I'm going to run everything. So everybody who's in there already is understandably going to take second fiddle. They're going to understandably give him the throne. I'm here to stay for whatever years, forever time. But while I'm here, I will not be challenged. I will be the man. And we're going to run everything from here, which says a lot, really a lot.
Yeah. So let's color up a little bit. I started to get word of this, you know, within 48 to 72 hours. I'm told it went down last weekend, so would be the start of the third week of June 2025,
which around was the 21st, right?
Right, which was about 10 to 15 days after the bus went down, and they were all arrested and incarcerated. I'm told that there was an order that went out for everybody that got an invitation to go to this private residence in St. Leonard, that it was pretty much everybody that Leo Rizzuto and Pete D'Adamo view as integral and kind of
leaders.
A semi-restructure, I guess, because they're saying we're going to stay at top, but we want to kind of reorganize the different tentacles of our operation. We want to bring in some new blood. We want to promote some people and so forth. I'm told that you might have had upwards of 24 people, if not more, and that some of the people that were there had never met each other before.
Whoa.
What is that? First of all, before anything, what does that say? Doesn't that speak about how they 4D chess this thing in the Rizzutos? So the right hand never knows what the left hand's doing.
Hey, listen, we're talking about that Marty Robert was, you know, playing three-dimensional chess. Yeah. Well, you know, Rizzutos in a certain way, there are so many years in power that sometimes we take them for granted. Like if, you know, there's no strategy behind all of this. But right. If you stay 20, 30 years at the top, there is a strategy. You know, they understand how it works. And one thing's very important, and I think you know this much more than I do, a lot of people who run the prisons don't run the streets. You know, it's like two worlds. And he's telling everybody, if your contacts are right, you know, he says, listen, don't worry about it. Not only am I going to run the outside, I'm going to run the inside, which is, to me, very, very significant.
It's telling. And just in the fact that he was able to hold, according to my sources, that he was able to hold, or the two of them, him and his right hand right now, Pete D'Adamo, who went from a real side character, and you know, 5 years ago, and now, you know, is right on the top of the marquee in terms of who's calling the shots, what the brain trust is. He is right now in a romantic relationship with Leo Rizzuto's sister, who's also an attorney, like Leo is, you know, formally educated. So she's a, you know, mafia prince. He comes from kind of the other side of the tracks a little bit, you know, comes from LaSalle, you know, a little grittier area than you know, Laval, where
opposites attract, you know, like, yeah. A great movie, by the way, you know?
Yes.
From the streets to the princess.
Right. So they're, what does it say that they're able to get a community, you know? I think when you hear that at face, oh, they got a phone in there and they were able to do FaceTime and communicate. I think on its face, that sounds kind of, wow, shocking. But if you know, if you really understand the way that things are in prison, even in America, and I'm guessing it's like that, you know, even more so in Canada, because things are a little more lax, it's probably not that surprising or out of the ordinary that you could get a cell phone.
Not really. Listen, last week there was a journalist who came out, says there was a sweep in prisons. They caught over 60 cellulars. Right. So it's not like, you know, it's like it never happens. There's a lot of interaction, drones coming in, taking in, but doesn't matter. The second he got there, he had already a phone for him and all that, meaning he has already a lot of power inside, you know?
Yeah. So it took them a couple of weeks, let's say, to kind of figure out exactly what they wanted to do. During those couple of weeks, we mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, a lot of people chiming in with their two cents. It seemed, and I think I mentioned this because we did a podcast right after the bust, with our initial impressions, I'm confident in what my sources are telling me. I was wrong with one of my predictions about Campari Frank coming in and running the ship. So we'll talk about that in a moment. But, this wasn't something that was done willy-nilly. This was like, we're going to button up in these next couple weeks. We're going to let people speculate, let them fill the rumor mills or whatever. It seemed like the mainstream, you know, again, we mentioned this before. I think we mentioned this on our last podcast. It seemed like the mainstream media wants to write the obit. And we're, in some ways, the way I viewed the positioning of the reporting was that it's not if Desjardins and Mirarchi will come into power,
it's when.
And it was like they were almost coronating. It was almost a coronation.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. That was the feeling. That was how it was written. This was like, it was an obituary. We're saying this is the end. They're showing. And they said, listen, let's go to chapter two. We've read chapter one. We've read it. We read the first book. Now let's go to the second book. Volume two, I mean.
Right. And giving credit to Leo Rizzuto and his family, they've been written off the page a number of times in the last couple decades with this great Canadian mafia war that erupted in the 2000s and still rages today in some iterations. There's been a lot of times when people have said, the organization is a house of cards. He himself is a dead man walking. I mean, I said that. I said that on the Viceland Kingdom Come documentary that I executive produced and came out. I said I would be shocked if he made it through 2024. Well, the joke's on me. He didn't just make it. He seems to be thriving despite the fact that he's.
But Scott, don't forget that you also said and you came out with a story of a great meeting between the Hells Angels. Right. So don't forget that at that meeting, maybe he started putting already his places. So he says, listen, I might be doing time. And if I'm doing time, you know, you have to think that this guy with Marty Robert are both chess players, you know?
Yeah. One, superpowers.
Exactly. And one of them, you know, as... the fodder's history behind him, knowing exactly, hey, I've been through this war. I've been through one of these things. My son, my father, my grandfather went to jail. My brother-in-law. So I know how to play this if it happens to me. So let's not take them for granted. Let's not take this, you know, like they're dead. Yeah. Even though we both thought, you know, at one point,
I think we can draw a line, though, from what you said. From the way that the peace was brokered in late 24, it was almost a two and a half year shooting and firebombing war between the Rizzuto mob and the Hells Angels, longtime partners and brothers in arms, and made hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, over the years. And then some things happened, and in 2022, everything. War broke out, and in 2023, Leo Rizzuto survives an assassination attempt. But let's kind of draw a line in from what we knew then and what I'm reporting now, which is So the piece is brokered by D'Adamo and Leo Rizzuto with Marty Robert. D'Adamo, with the help of Robert's people, conceived this new regulatory enforcement body known as the Union, where you have over a dozen people representing different groups and factions sit on this union board of sorts, and that very top is D'Adamo and Robert, and they send orders through the union, and it has streamlined a lot of the issues that they were having previously about who was shot calling where, and sometimes there'd be communication gaps, which is, I think, how it all started with there was a murder of a Hell's Angel back in 2019, Ontario Hell's Angel that allegedly was called in by the Rizzutos, and it set a bad precedent, I think, and left a bad taste in some people's mouths, and eventually the ripple effects sent them to war. So from what I'm told, this union, which has been in effect since around, you know, the Thanksgiving, I think it was kind of structured in the weeks leading up to the peace conference that you're talking about that happened on December 11th at the EMMA. And I'm told that go ahead. Sorry.
I just want to tell you, because you said the EMMA, it's kind of funny, not funny, but it's, you know, it's an old prison.
Yeah, it's an old prison. They turned into a trendy restaurant.
A restaurant, exactly. So it's kind of funny. Downtown Montreal, an old prison, a woman's prison also.
Yeah. But. And I'm told that there were at least a half a dozen people that were made at this meeting last weekend, and that at least a couple of them were in the union. And that the belief from Rizzuto and D'Adamo was that we needed to have made men
before we
on the union. Well, that I'm again, some of this is speculation because I don't know some of the granulars.
Yeah.
But I don't think anybody on or in the union that was created in late 2024, I don't think up until this meeting took place. So let's say up until Memorial Day. Well, that's an American holiday. Up until the start of summer 2025, I don't think there was any made members, like formally inducted members of the Rizzuto mob on the union or in the union. Yeah. So I think it was decided, or I shouldn't say I think, I know, I was told, that it was decided that they needed to make a couple of these guys so they have, it's more than just they're taking orders from made guys, that they have the stripe now to go and speak as a member.
And don't forget, that also shows a bit of the three-dimensional chess, saying, I might have to put people on the streets right now, force the names of these people, show them that I'm loyal, I will be loyal to them, but they have to be loyal to me with marking them as my men. So it shows that he knew something was coming, or at least he was providing some enforcement before something happens. To me, it's very relative. And in my opinion, maybe I'm wrong, but you know, like if I'm putting somebody on the streets beforehand, maybe I'm preparing myself. You know, I'm a good businessman. You know, I'm preparing myself in case something happens to me.
Well, I know in terms of order of succession, in terms of who was managing boots on the ground, the union, that it went, D'Adamo was very hands-on.
Yeah, you said
then,
that. Yeah.
Then D'Adamo gets taken off the street in March. He's the first one to go behind bars. They nail him in a gun case. It appears that this was all very calculated. Like, they Absolutely. Wanted to get him off. They got a tip or sat on a tip.
It was. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Until they wanted to use the tip.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The vehicle that he was being transported in between meetings one day had a secret compartment where there was a gun. So that's like March 25th, I think. Then this bust happens in the middle of June. And from what I was told, the succession went from D'Adamo to Baldy Barbario was then in charge. He was the street boss, but then he was also put in charge of dealing with the union on a regular basis. Well, he's behind bars now. So they needed to
fill
that gap with somebody that had a button.
You're on it. Exactly. You know, I mean, and the D'Amo is very important. Also, people understand, like, this guy was maybe, and I don't want to downgrade his presence, but he was like the driver. And now he became one of the owners of the car, you know, really fast.
He didn't have the pedigree. He was a guy that was muscle. I mean, he was always known as a smart guy.
Yeah.
And he's definitely really showing the craftiness and his acumen to apply certain business principles to the underworld. And it's paying a lot of dividends. But he was also known as a guy that was very capable, and he started on the docks, you know, as a collector for the West End Gang Irish Mob, was working for as a young man, working for Vito Rizzuto when he was in his 20s as a liaison. I'm guessing this was way before he got a button.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Liaisoning with the Maddox brothers, who he was close to, were the bosses, or one of them still left, I think, of the West End Gang Irish Mob. So, yeah, he went from somebody even more recently, where I know he took over the crew of the Solicitos when Little Sauce got bumped up to underboss. Or I've gotten some people that have given me a little bit of grief for the titles. And, you know, I think underboss, whether it's an official title or not, the number two guy, and consigliere, whether it's official or not, the top advisor, elder states. I think sometimes because of the way the La Cosa Nostra and the United States Mafia works, there's not a direct correlation sometimes, and some people get
But let's not go crazy with the names. I understand.
Put I just want to be clear, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know. I read also the comments, and it's part of life, you know.
Right.
You
can, yeah. Whatever D'Adamo's title is, exactly, he's the number two guy, and he replaced Stefano Solicito, who had been the number two guy, who had been a close friend of D'Adamo's, and D'Adamo had come up under the original Saw Solicito, Rocco Solicito, and Vito Rizzuto, and as a young man, and the Maddox brothers. So he might not have had the bloodline pedigree in terms of who his dad was or his grandpa or uncle was, but he had a good gangman mentorship pedigree from who he was around. So yeah, he was a guy that was, I mean, I knew who he was, but I obviously it shows you how, in some ways, how disconnected I was that I didn't realize where he was, the trajectory was. And then when he hit the point where he went from somebody who ran a region to an administrator, he made a huge impact right off the bat, being able to calm tensions that had looked like it could tear apart everything out there. And it was really, from what I'm told, you know, his personal presence and guidance and diplomacy that fixed everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, and don't judge yourself too hard, because all the experts here in Quebec never saw Pic Turmel come out as fast as he did. You know, right. Everybody was thinking it was like this low level, uneducated, not important player, and we saw him grow. So we all make a bit of mistakes, and these guys, you know, you're not talking to them directly. So
I just want to.
Yeah, I understand that, but
great, and I know there are no. The mob doesn't put out press releases.
Oh, that's it. Before.
You got to trust what you're getting, exactly, from the people you're getting from. But I will say definitively that my sourcing within the Rizzuto mob and the Montreal Hells Angels is as high as you can get in terms of people giving information. I'm I'm blessed. Obviously, I'm never going to reveal who those sources are, but and I've been able to report this stuff because I'm getting it from people that were there.
And if I can cut you off just a minute, some of your sources, you told me, listen, there's a one or two journalists. I said, you want me to speak about, you know, what you heard of? And you told me, yeah, you could tell them, right? And all of these journalists who are right around the criminal underground world for years never ever told me it wasn't right or was it wrong, but they didn't want to give you acknowledgement, but okay. They never said it's bullshit and no, it can't happen. From the restaurants to the meetings to the streets to the name of the group, they never said no, it's a possibility. And more and more every time you came out with a story, more and more some of these journalists says, yeah, it's, let me look at it, let me take,
well, I really at the end of the day, you know, take away, you know, ego or whatever, like, you just want to get it right. And I, whenever I get it wrong, I want to correct it and make it right.
Absolutely.
The idea is just to get the record straight and you get the story out the way it needs to be out. And whether it's somebody from, you know, a law enforcement source reaching out, or not even a source, somebody from law enforcement reaching out and saying, hey, you got this wrong. Yeah. I want to correct it. If it's a guy from the street saying, hey, I need to talk to you because some of the stuff you're saying is bullshit. Hey, where do you want to meet? Let's talk. Let's break it down. I'll always, you know, give those type of people just as much of the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to give people on the other side of the law, and I'm going to correct the record if it needs to be corrected.
And Scott, don't forget, and there's a lot of ways to communicate information because they want to throw it out there. Yeah. And sometimes it's not your main source, help you and also disguise the truth. You know, they're going to throw out.
Everybody wants to shape the narrative.
Exactly. So it's very important that I understand that, you know, you have sources that are pretty decent and keep them.
And I want to be clear. You can't just take something from one perspective. I mean, you got to know where the information is coming from, what the agenda is.
Absolutely.
You got to compare and contrast it to information coming from other people. So at the time of the war, I was getting it from both sides in a good way. And I think I was able to find, you know, middle ground in my reporting to represent. And then the way it came to an end, and then what we got now. So I think whether they're looking to use me as a conduit to get this information out, whether it's unintentional, whether it's this is just the way it is, want to report on it, great. You don't want to report on it, fine. But I had a number of people in the days after this meeting took place that reached out unprompted. I didn't reach out to them and say, hey, what's going on? They reached out to me and said, we want you to know what happened and that it was a real injection of energy and that it was, yes, it was a making ceremony, which is a bit unconventional that it would be done via a communications device on a FaceTime. But it also served as a state of the union with Leo Rizzuto and Pete D'Adamo addressing the organization and giving them faith and giving them purpose and saying, hey, we're resilient and we're not going anywhere. And anybody, once again, after years and years of getting all these, these send-offs that it's all over with. It's not over with, not under our watch. I mean, I said, so let's go back to.
Don't also forget that soldiers are soldiers. They need to be prepped. They also have to, you know, because they will fold if they see the leadership is not confident. So they have to be confident to show the subs. Right. Listen, we're here to stay. Don't worry. I'm here. I'll help you. We're the Rizzutos. We are exactly what we are 10 years ago, and maybe even stronger. Whatever,
winning hearts and minds. And
that's it. Exactly.
Reaffirming the faith in the leadership. And again, Leo Rizzuto, the picture of resilience. I've personally written his obit two or three times and keeps on surviving. And again, in some ways thriving despite the fact that he's got this case right now. But let's talk about a piece of my reporting that goes to how I miscalculated a couple of weeks ago. And I don't know what else we can read from it, but I think we'll be able to read something from it eventually, if not now. And that is who wasn't at this meeting. So I'm told that Campari, Frank, Arcadi, the last member really of the Vito Rizzuto cabinet inner circle, really the last of the OGs.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
In Quebec and Montreal. And he's Calabrian and handled, you know, a lot of the rough stuff, the grimier stuff for Rizzuto. Mentored guys like Skunk Giordano and Chit Del Basso and Baldy Barbario.
It shows what type of guy that he looks at. Huh? If you see the underbosses underneath him, they all have that same style, all of them. Yeah.
Right. So, and on an aside, one of those, it's not great from a humanity perspective, but just great from a levity perspective. The kind of famous quote on a wiretap from Del Basso, who's trying to collect from somebody, and the guy says, "Who are you?" And he says, "I'm the guy that's going to be making you eat your meals from a straw for the next 6 months."
Forget my name. You know who I am after he says.
Right. And I know this is being recorded, and I know that you're going to go to the police, but I don't care.
I don't give a shit.
Yeah. I'm going to twist you up like a pretzel.
It's a scene from Goodfellas. You know, and it's an incredible 15 seconds of tape.
And that collection that Del Basso was doing on that extortion attempt was for money that was owed to Campari Frank. Yeah. So he does have a representative. He had representatives there. It wasn't like he was left out of the cold, or left out in the cold, or banned from this important meeting. His main guy, Carmelo Canestraro, aka Mini Me, who I'm told is like number three in the organization, or very high up, someone who represents Campari Frank, was there. And some other people that represent his interests, but he wasn't. And I guess that's a tip of the hat to some of the mainstream media that I disagreed with, but it looked like they were right. Their sources, I think Montreal Gazette, Journal,
said that he
was tapping out, like he didn't want any involvement in it. It looks like they were right. And so I kind of thought it would be difficult for Rizzuto and Diadamo to you know, keep control from behind bars. Didn't go so great for Vito Rizzuto when he tried to do that. But it's a different time, different place, different situation. And I kind of saw kind of some things coming full circle. We mentioned this on the last pod when I said Vito Rizzuto, while he was being taken to the plane to go off to the to prison in America, says to the people that are taking him there, Campari Frank ain't ready for the top seat. He's not built for it. So there was some poetic justice. I thought that now 20 years later,
I'll show you.
Right, it looked like that Arcadi was the one that could have saved the Rizzuto mafia empire, but I was trying to, I guess, maybe write a narrative that wasn't there to be written. And it looks like, based on my further reporting, that, yes, he's not involved in this. His people have a role. He'll still be represented. If he needs to step in some type of advisory capacity, he will. And as the mainstream media reported, and I can confirm, he has in the years since he has gone way more low profile after a prison sentence and has been really... You haven't heard anything from him.
Absolutely.
And that really, would you rather, you know, everybody around him has died, has been killed or has died. I mean, literally everybody, every major figure that was around Vito Rizzuto in the mid 2000s or early 2000s,
they're gone.
Pretty much been assassinated. So, you know, kudos to Campari Frank for not letting his ego get the best of him and just being like, all right, I'm gonna stick.
I'm tapping out. Maybe you're right.
Go in the shadows.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm not, you know, I'm still here, but I don't need to be on Front Street. So that was interesting to me to hear that he was not, he was the only major member of the organization that wasn't there, that he did not want to be there, that he sent Mini-Me talks for him, has spoken for him for a while. Chit Del Basso told RCMP and SQ that he had been pushed out in favor of Mini-Me, that Mini-Me had taken all of his stuff when he did that interview at the airport right after Leo Rizzuto survived the assassination attempt, and he tried to flee the country knowing that he was living on borrowed time. And
that's what he said, even. Yeah.
And that's
Wouldn't you leave?
Yeah.
Right. You know, in a certain point, that's exactly. That's another one. Pretty. It's a good story to come back later on because, you know, he was supposedly protected in a certain way for what he did or what he did. And he decided to leave. You know, it also shows a bit that the Rizzutos weren't as not as strong as we thought they were. You know, they were much stronger still from the outside because, you know, they wanted him dead. And
the attempted assassination is in March of 2023.
Yeah.
You come for the king. You better not miss.
Absolutely.
That's one of the oldest, axioms in the world of, war and insurrections and gangland history. And he came for the king and he missed. And it cost him his life in less than 6 months. He was dead in June. So I
would have loved to know where he landed, where he was going in Italy.
Right.
To me, it would be a great, great indicator of where he landed, maybe in Italy, not in Italy, but in Rome, maybe, the airport. But where was he going after?
Right, but it's almost like you're going into the belly of the beast there, too.
Absolutely.
Let's go over there.
But that's why I wanted to know exactly which area, because, you know, it puts 2 + 2 together. You see, where did Turmel go? You know, it's important where
the Turmel was in Rome. He wasn't in Sicily.
When he broke off
from his backing from the Rizzutos, he couldn't be in Sicily anymore.
Absolutely. So, you know, that, you know, there's something, because at one point I said, who is backing up Turmel in all of this Europe?
And he had backing from the mafia, but just not the Sicilian.
It wasn't exactly. But, you know, we thought maybe, listen, it's the Rizzutos backing him.
They were at a point. They were co-signing him and hiding him. And then for the first year of him being on the run, year and a half of being on the run.
Okay.
When the ceasefire broke down in October of 24, there had been a ceasefire between the Hells Angels and Blood Family Mafia. This is when the Hells Angels Rizzuto mob was still going, but was winding down, and Diadamo was trying to get everybody on the same page. Rizzuto sent word to Turmel, you're done. This is it.
It's over.
And Turmel went back at the Hells Angels. And at that point, word was sent out, like, we have nothing to do with you anymore. That's why he had to get out of some of the places that he was being hidden by the Rizzutos, because
they were going to catch him. They were going to get him.
They told him, it's best for all of us if we make peace. We're making peace, therefore you have to make peace. And
Turmel didn't
listen to them, right?
But it's still very important. Sorry, Scott. It's still very important that he had enough connections to go to another clan. Yeah, and that's just to show you,
he's very resourceful, 28-year-old.
Absolutely, absolutely. Much bigger player and much smarter man than we think. You know, like or he's sold out to be. Short term that he did Europe, he made connections. He really did make connections. You can't be
on the run for 2 years without being at a whole on another continent,
not speaking the language, not speaking the language.
Type, right.
Absolutely.
He's far this is kind of a dubious distinction, but a far better criminal than a lot of people gave him credit for. He's a gangbanger. Yeah. He's a wannabe rapper. You know, he's a poser.
He's a street punk almost. Right. You know, saying they're undermining him totally. And more that you read from him, more and more that you see from it, staying in Italy and the cops keeping him.
Yeah,
meaning that he has a lot of information. Maybe still, that's why they didn't extradite him right away to Canada because
he's still not back, right?
He's not back. He's not back. So that's
a whole other.
Yeah, exactly. We'll do another.
Our next podcast will be when Ice Pick Tramiel comes home. And just from a tactical perspective, and I know it's easy for someone like myself to Monday morning quarterback people that are out there trying to kill each other. So. Yeah. Take that with a grain of salt. But it seemed to me that the situation with Chet Del Basso trying to kill Leo Rizzuto was Del Basso making it way more complicated than it needed to be and outsourcing it to guys that wanted to, you know, maybe win like a action movie award rather than actually get the job done. You knew where the guy was. He wasn't changing his routine. He was going around without security. He had no bodyguards. And he's going to the same cafe every day, every afternoon, and leaving the cafe to go home. And at the same time, they clocked him. Just, you know, again, not to sound crass here or you know, just, you know, cap him in the parking lot. Like, what? You're going to wait for the guy to get in the car and jump on the expressway and come up. I mean, to me, it's like, well, you deserve now for everything that, you know, you had the perfect opportunity to bang this guy out. Super easy. He was making it easy for you. Again, it's easy. Everyone's going to say, it's easy for me to say this. I've never even shot a gun, let alone killed anybody.
But I understand what you're trying to say. Don't forget, you're a hitman, right? A hitman. Yeah. You limit the exposure, you try to get him the fastest and the best way you can. Yeah. And there was a lot of opportunities if he could have much before being in a moving truck or a moving car.
He should have done it himself.
Exactly.
He had a bunch of other guys that did go do it. And he's arranging everything for the other guys. He's giving him the gun. He's buying him the cars. He's telling
him. He gave him the information. He gave everything for sure. Which is kind of.
I don't wish anybody, nobody deserves to die. So I'm not saying, but it's like, dude, you know, like we said, you go for the king, you better not miss. And this was a sloppy effort. And you know, everybody knows the skin that's in the game here. And like we said, he knew he was trying to get out of town. And when they told him he couldn't get out of town, he's like, you're giving me a death sentence by making me stay here.
Absolutely.
So as we wrap up, you know, I'm told that it was what happened last weekend. It was a very rah-rah, got people kind of juiced up again. And, you know, the pride factor was played up and this is not going to be as difficult as, you know, this was the pitch. This is not going to be as difficult as it might appear. We're going to keep things in a similar order than we had before. The union is still going to, you know, be our voices. There's now made guys on the union. I'm also told that I have not been able to confirm the exact specifics, but I'm told that Marty's people were either there or close by and told before what's going on and then met with after to be told what had happened. That this was not done without the direct connection and communication with their partners in the Hells Angels, mainly Marty Robert.
I wouldn't be surprised. Listen, if they built something together with the union, it'd be kind of counterproductive to not give your partners any sort of information, you know, coming in. So let me boost my men like Rob Roy with Mel Gibson movie, you know, let me boost them. But I know that you're backing me up or you're part of my army. It's just, I got to speak to these guys and I got to show them. Maybe, you know, I'm just.
One thing I heard, and this could easily be conflated, and I want to make sure that it's not. I didn't hear that there were Hell's Angels there. I heard that there was communication with the Hell's Angels, and there were meetings before and after. I also heard from another source that there were people at the meeting that were not Sicilian. Wow. or Calabrian. They were not Italians. So I did not. You could put two and two together and say there were Hell's Angels there. I don't want to do that. I did not hear that. I heard that they were in communications with the Hell's Angels before and after. And then I heard separately from something I have not been able to confirm, but I've heard it from somebody that is a very highly placed source, that there were a number of, I shouldn't say a number, there were some people, I don't know what the number is, that were present at this meeting of more than two dozen people that were not of Italian descent.
Well, so it shows that we spoke about it last time we talked together. You know, the Italians are not a dying breed, but the Europeans have less children, less people, so they're joining forces together because, you know, the army has to continue. So
there's some history to it. Desjardins,
absolutely
Canadian, even though he had some connections via marriage to high.
But that was Vito's strength. Don't forget, that was Vito's strength. He was like, okay, I will put people in charge. I will bring people in, even though they're not from Italian descent. Yeah. Don't forget that Gregory Woolley was very close to the Vitos, you know, and he was black. He wasn't definitely not Italian, and he was very close to them, and much more respected from Vito than other people, you know, of Italian descent.
So, you know, Desjardins at one point was de facto number two. I mean,
absolutely.
He might not have been Sicilian, but he was representing Vito. In everything that was going on the street, and this was for two plus decades.
Absolutely.
So you had that. You had Joe Bravo. I think his real name was Juan Fernandez, who was caught on a wire claiming that he had been made. I don't know if that's true, but he was told people he had been made.
He told people,
and he was Vito's guy in Toronto for a while, and then went off to across the pond when the war Sicily. Broke out and got killed for trying to play the middle between Desjardins and Vito Rizzuto.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not unheard of that there would be in the world of the Rizzuto mob, that there would be non-Italians at important meetings and events. It should also be pointed out, I should have pointed this out earlier, and I know I kind of said something about it, but I didn't drill down specifically on this. This is not LCN. This is not La Cosa Nostra. What the Rizzuto mob is not what the U.S. mafia is. So absolutely. They don't have to abide by the same rules that La Cosa Nostra does. They started off as a faction of La Cosa Nostra, but then evolved away from it. And so they make their own rules.
Well, they're the sixth family, like they, right. You know, they're trying, but they are totally independent and they make their own rules. Exactly. And I also said, and you know it as well as I do, because of the laws here in Canada, it gave them a bit more latitude to become much more stronger than other people think they were. You know, because they had enormous, enormous connections all over the world. Don't forget that when Catroni was in power, they were extradited to Venezuela, right? And they met.
They were in exile.
Not extradited, but and they met a lot of people there that made them enormous power. Also, so
yes, they're definitely a. They don't frown on diversity. They embrace diversity, and that's why Vito was such a maestro of being able to keep everybody happy at all these different. Ethnic groups and different criminal factions. And we've seen in the last 20 years how unique that was and what a rare gift or rare...
A CEO. Honest to God, he's a real CEO that could keep everybody under him happy and nobody's trying to undermine him.
Yeah.
So he was a real... He could have been anything else.
So yeah, 20, you had 20 years of relative peace. It's not saying there weren't, I mean, there was the biker
war. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
20 years of relative peace, and then it's been 20 years of
chaos. And a lot of people say that the biker war was stopped because
he stepped in and stopped it.
He stopped it. So, you know, it was very important to understand the dynamics of the Montreal mob.
I think it was called the Blue or Club Blue Martini Bar. He held a meeting there I just remember that was the name of the one. There was like two meetings. That was the name of one of them. Another one was at a high end restaurant, kind of like what happened with the
same thing, same style. Games, exactly. You know? Exactly. But,
I think it was more in the open because they wanted the press at that point to talk about it. He stepped in and put an end to it. So, well, thank you so much, Ken, for taking some time out on your weekend. Wanted to let the story breathe for a little bit, see if I could find out anything more or get anything corrected. So it's been about a week since this meeting that we're going to talk about or that we've spoken about. And then it'd been about 10 days or so since the arrest, or 2 weeks since the arrest. So it's been about 2.5 weeks.
Well, it's a great week. Yeah, it's a great story. And by the way, it's great information. And like I said, you know, a lot of these people right now are not denying nothing of what you've said.
Yeah.
So as a podcaster from Detroit, it's kind of awesome.
It's crazy.
800 miles from the original.
I am, though. I mean, to my, you know, just to put a little credit in my corner, I am only, and I don't know how much this means to anybody, but I am literally, I can get to Canada in, you know, 5 minutes. It's very, very simple for me to jump across the border. I've been doing it my whole life.
Yeah, but you're still
not, 800 not kilometers. Quebec, from... Not in Quebec. Yeah, I've exactly. only been in Quebec a few times, admittedly. Spent most of my time in Ontario. I still want to make, I'm eager to make it to British Columbia. I've never seen Vancouver. I really want to see.
It's a great place also.
Yeah. Well, so thank you very much, Ken. I'm sure there's a lot more to be reported in the coming weeks. But as of right now, Leo Rizzuto staying in charge of his crime family. He's going to run it from prison, held this meeting, held a making ceremony, restructured. And I think the last thing I'll say as we break, if Desjardins or anybody from Toronto, or if they want to come in and try to, you know, take a swing at the champ or you know, make a move for the crown, it's going to be opposed. And I think that some of the reporting before was that they were almost, you know, throwing up their hands and waving the white towel. And I think that's the takeaway here.
But don't forget, he's in prison, so he's a much easier target. So right. let's see if the rah-rah is real.
Yep. Well, thank you, Ken. I hope
thank you, sir.
Enjoyed. Please like, share, and subscribe. For Ken Pereira, Benny Behind the Glass, my MVP producer, I'm Scott Bernstein, Original Gangsters Podcast, uncovering the underworld, one city, one region, one country at a time. We're out.
Take care.